That's Mali Kuba. It's from the award-winning album Afro-Cubism, recorded and released in 2010, featuring Cuban musicians Eliades Ochoa and his Cuarteto Patria. And from Mali, Tumani Jabate on Cora with his group of musicians, many of them too numerous to mention, but delivering a wonderful collaboration here on Mali Kuba. This is Utrice Lead, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. Reversing the victorious Caravan of Freedom, as it was called, the march he and his revolutionary forces made toward Havana after defeating the U.S.-backed Fulgencio Batista in 1959, the cremated remains of national hero Fidel Castro Ruz, who died on November the 25th at the age of 90, are being taken from Havana to Santiago de Cuba for final rites on December 4th. The two-day trek, approximating about 560 miles, will give Cubans along the length of most of the country the opportunity to pay their respects and bid him farewell. Castro's leadership of the Republic of Cuba as prime minister from 1959 to 1976, and as president from 1976 to 2006, shook up the world, causing political, economic, and even military alignments and realignments north and south, east and west, while supporting humanitarian efforts and anti-imperialist and independence movements, especially in the developing world. So today we'll be talking about Fidel Castro from our own personal perspectives. I just want to share this one with you, which is one of my personal perspectives, and that was the visit that Castro made to Harlem. And it was, in fact, a wonderful treat, both for him, he said, and, of course, for all Harlemites and people far beyond. It was in Harlem that Fidel Castro met Malcolm X, and he considered that a highlight of his visit to the United States, one of his first visits to the United States, when he was due to make a speech just a year after he was installed as the leader of Cuba. And this is the year after the invasion in 1960, and was treated rather badly. He was put at the Shelburne Hotel and was treated very, very poorly there. And Malcolm X went to see him and said, you know, we have accommodations for you uptown, and maybe you would want to try that at the Teresa Hotel. And, of course, that led Castro to cancel his plans to either set up a camp in Central Park or to set up some tents outside of the United Nations where he felt he could be better accommodated. So he ended up at the Teresa Hotel, and it was an incredible reception, and he never, ever forgot it. The next time he came to Harlem was in 1995, and the reception was equally raucous, extremely enthusiastic response from the community as a whole and parts beyond. He made a speech at the prestigious or the well-known Adam Clayton Powell's old church, which at the time was being stewarded by the Reverend Butts, Calvin O. Butts III. And in that speech, he talked about what mattered to him. And I want to share that with you. It was a very, very interesting speech. And what he selected to share with the packed house, the packed audience, was different from what people had expected. They expected, I suppose, a firebrand political kind of speech. And it was, in its own way, except that it was a window into his thinking about what change would eventually mean for Cuba and how he saw the world and what mattered most to him. So let's listen, and when we come back from this tape, we get to your versions of what you think mattered most with respect to Fidel Castro from your perspective.
Aquí en Harlem,
here in Harlem,
conocí a Malcolm X.
I met Malcolm X.
Conocí otras muchas personalidades. Eran días difíciles.
Those were difficult days.
Siempre son difíciles.
Well, we always are in difficult days.
Los días. Pero por delante estaba una lucha muy grande.
But we had ahead a very hard struggle.
La grande batalla de Martin Luther King.
The great battles of Martin Luther King
por los derechos
were
civil.
Still to take place. His struggle for the civil rights.
Las grandes luchas de
the
las
great
minorías.
Struggles
negras.
By the
hispánica,
the black,
latinoamericana,
the Hispanics,
partes,
the Latin Americans.
Por mejorar sus condiciones
to improve
de vida,
their living conditions.
La lucha de los ancianos,
the struggle
de los
by the
enfermos,
elders,
todo.
By the sick.
Sé perfectamente
I
bien
know very well
que muchas de esas conquistas
that many of those conquests
hoy están corriendo
are in danger today.
Sé que hay algunas personas
I know
algunas personas
I know
que quisieran barrer
that some people would like to sweep away all those conquests.
Pero barrerlo completamente.
Some people would like to do away with all those conquests,
ancianos,
to do away with every assistance to the sick, to the elder. They would like to do away with the affirmative actions.
Barrer.
They would like
con todo
to sweep away all the great achievements
que el pueblo más humilde
that the
de
American
Estados
people,
Unidos,
the ordinary, humble people of America have attained in all these
estos
years.
Años de lucha. Bueno, hago una breve referencia
well,
a eso
I just make a brief reference to this.
Y espero que nadie
and I hope
me impute por ello,
nobody would contest me for that.
Pero hacia Cuba, desde Estados Unidos, se transmiten alrededor de 1,000 horas
about
semanales.
1,000 hours of
son
broadcasting
semanales,
from
semanales.
The United States are
mil
at Cuba
horas semanales
every week,
de radio,
1,000 hours of radio broadcasting aimed against Cuba every
promoviendo
week,
la subversión,
promoting subversion,
los sabotajes a la
inciting
economía,
to sabotage against the economy,
atentado,
attempts against our leaders' lives.
Esta modesta persona que ustedes
this
ven aquí,
modest person that you see here
tiene el privilegio,
has the privilege,
y yo creo que la iglesia debe
and I think that the
eso.
Church must have something to do with that.
De haber sobrepasado
of having survived
cientos de planes
hundreds
de atentados.
Of attempts against my life.
Yo creo que las oraciones de ustedes o de muchos de ustedes están presentes.
I think that your prayers have been saving me.
Por aquí. Algo tiene que haber.
There must be something.
Puesto que bueno,
since
¿cómo habrá sido posible?
How could it be possible?
Y todavía esos planes
and those plans
se elaboran.
Are still being hatched today.
No estoy culpando al gobierno.
I'm not blaming the U.S. administration.
Pero hay grupos de extrema derecha,
but there are extreme right-wing groups, extreme racist groups that continue to work feverishly
para llevar a cabo atentados
to carry forward attempts
contra la economía de
against
nuestro
the economy
país
of our country
y asesinato
and to murder
de dirigentes
the leaders
de la revolución.
Of our country.
Se mantiene como ahora, nadie se imagina.
That's still going on.
Que no, que eso haya cambiado.
That has not changed.
En realidad. Me emocionaba el recuerdo de
I was moved by the memory when Mr. Butts was talking.
Que en la iglesia, en el,
he was reminded us of the day when we went to the church in Havana.
Allá en El Vedado, en La Habana. Yo recuerdo que aquel día yo me convertí como una especie de hermano también.
I remember that that day I felt like a brother.
Porque
in that church.
Pronuncié una especie de sermón.
Because I made not a speech but a kind of a sermon.
Creo que hasta I delivered el estilo a sermon. De sermón. Y él se recordaba de más datos.
And he was also reminding us.
Cuando preguntó.
Of all the data.
Sobre mis creencias.
When I was asked about my beliefs.
Y lo que yo le había respondido.
And what I had answered then.
Con toda honestidad.
I answered in all honesty.
Es que yo no tuve la suerte de tener.
That I was not lucky enough.
Tan buenos pastores.
To have such good pastors.
Que en vez de decirme cree. Me dijeran piensa.
Instead of telling me believe, they should have told me think, meditate.
Y llevaran a mi alma las convicciones.
That way they would have taken to my soul the convictions that I did not have the privilege
de recibir.
Of receiving.
Me convertí en sacerdote de
so I became a priest in a different cause.
Que no
a cause that I believe though
ninguna contradicción.
A cause that has no contradiction. A cause that has no contradiction with
Dios,
your religious belief and
Martí
the beliefs of God.
Que Dios era la idea del bien que velaba
God was the idea of good,
ser humano.
Of doing good to the human beings.
Y cuando él hablaba,
and while he was talking,
y yo pensaba en todos estos problemas
and I was
humanos,
thinking about all these human problems that I have been discussing here tonight, all the sufferings of humanity,
no quiero enumerar en,
and I do not want to go through the long list of
lo que sufren
calamities
4,500 millones de seres humanos
where 4.5 billion human beings are suffering in the world,
los miles de millones de ignorantes,
what billions of illiterate
gente por
starving
debajo del nivel
people,
de la pobreza,
people who are living under the poverty line are going through
salud,
without
nada.
Education, without medical
cuando
care.
Veo tanto
when
sufrimiento,
I see so much suffering,
me recordaba al hablar el hermano Butts.
I remember while Brother Butts was talking,
una historia o una leyenda,
of a story or a legend,
de un indio cubano,
of a Cuban native aborigine.
El indio Atuay.
Atuay was his name.
Que con ese espíritu de conquistador con que llegaron
the Spaniards
los españoles
arrived in our countries with that spirit of conquerors.
A la América Latina.
They arrived with that spirit in Latin America.
Con la cruz y con la espada.
They came with the cross and the sword.
Deben comprender que la cruz no se puede
you should understand that the cross cannot be introduced with a sword.
Pero el indio Atuay se sublevó contra
that aborigine Atuay uprised against the conquerors
y lo condenaron a morir
and
en la
he was
hoguera.
Sentenced to die in the fire.
Y cuando estaba en la hoguera,
and while he was
le dijeron.
While he was there in the pyre, he was told
que existía un cielo,
that there was heaven
y que a él lo querían bautizar para que fuera,
and that he should be baptized to be able to go to heaven.
Entonces,
and then he asked
el indio preguntó si los españoles
if
iban
the Spaniards
al cielo.
Go to that heaven, I do not want to go there.
Y él no dijo si creía o no creía. Dice, bueno, entonces.
He was not asked whether he believed or not.
Yo no quiero
he
ir
said,
al cielo.
If they go to heaven, then I do not want to go there.
Del mismo modo, en este mundo, muchos,
and nowadays, in this world,
que nos hablan del cielo.
There are many who speak to us about heaven.
En este mundo,
in this world,
tan llenos de abusos,
right here, in this world, so full of abuses,
y tan lleno de injusticia,
so full of injustices.
Y en ese sentido,
and in that sense,
yo podría decir,
I could say,
a ese cielo,
that heaven
que ustedes practican en este mundo,
that you practice in this world,
nosotros
we do not
no
want to go
ir.
There. We do not believe in that
nosotros,
heaven.
Nosotros queremos ir a un cielo de justicia.
We want to go to a heaven where there is justice.
Y de dignidad humana.
Where there is human dignity.
Nosotros queremos ir a un
we
cielo.
We want to go to a heaven.
Nosotros queremos ir a un cielo de justicia.
We want to go to a heaven where there is justice.
Y de dignidad humana.
Where there is human dignity.
Nosotros queremos ir a un
we
cielo.
We want to go to a heaven
de hermandad.
Where there is brotherhood.
Y por ese en ese cielo.
And in that heaven.
Creo.
I believe.
Y por ese cielo
and for that heaven,
dar mi vida.
I'm willing to give up my life.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you.
Fidel Castro addressing a packed house at the Abyssinia Baptist Church in Harlem in 1960, and then again in 1995. In 35 years, he said, nothing had changed. There had been in excess, in fact, it has been corroborated, in excess of 638 separate assassination attempts on his life, which he says he believes that prayers saved him from that fate. But he said something quite remarkable, and that is, that rather than faith, you know, in some ethereal being, he says instead to think. Think rather than simply believe. Really important distinction there. Well, as I said, his remains, which were cremated, are leaving from Havana and coursing their way through to Santiago de Cuba, where he was near where he was born and raised, and there he is, his ashes will be interred. But we notice, of course, same politics as usual. You know, the United States under President Obama is sending, I believe, just one person. He's not going himself. And several other countries, mostly from the West, not going, but interestingly as well, Russia's premier is not going, Vladimir Putin. He is instead sending a delegation as opposed to one person or two people representing, say, the United States. And people are going to be watching these things as an example of how long and how bitter the resentment has been against Fidel Castro for his beliefs, but mostly because he shamed the West by basically upending their installed leader, Fulgencio Batista. And despite the fact that he had all of this help to maintain dictatorial power, he was, of course, defeated. The United States never got over that. And even though under President Obama, there is something of an indication that the United States is seeing how futile it has been all these years since 1959 to maintain the most stringent blockade of Cuba, the most terrible sanctions against it, simply because it does not conform to U.S. Whims and orders and dictates, and to allow the country to continue to be plundered in exchange for personal richness, wealth, personal advantage. He's been a pariah in many cases. But when you talk to other countries and people from other countries who personally have witnessed Cuba's role in improving life, in improving their lot as a nation, you get an entirely different response. And that is the response that is important, I think. So what are your thoughts as Cuba prepares to finally inter its beloved leader of 47 years and close one chapter and open another to its future? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Hello, Patricia from New York. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I hope
Thank
all
you
is
so
well.
Much.
You know, I've traveled to Cuba twice, the most recently in March of last year. And another trip was planned, and I actually depart for Cuba tomorrow evening. And we'll be in Santiago on Saturday when Fidel's ashes will be in Santiago. So this is going to be a bittersweet trip for me. The purpose of this particular trip was I had hoped to return prior to all of the Western corporations returning to Cuba. I wanted to see it one last time before everybody else descended upon the island. But, you know, as you listen to people's responses here in the U.S., especially the Cubans in Miami, who have been very instrumental and very vocal and very exuberant in their happiness, in Cuba itself, people always think that the Cuban people, when they talk about Fidel, that their speech is censored. And I can share with you that on my two previous trips, because we tend not to, you know, follow the regular route, the regular tour group, we have had at least I've had an opportunity to interact intimately with Cuban people. And I can tell you, while there is a generational divide on how Cubans see Cuba, when you're talking to anyone 50 and over, so it's generational, there is absolute adoration and love for Fidel. Because while people in this country, you know, they think about all the material gains, individual and personal material gains, in Cuba there's no homelessness. You're not living in the Taj Mahal, but there's no homelessness. Everyone has the basic necessities of food. I personally have seen maternal child health clinics in operation. That's my background as a midwife. You talk about free education, and people talk about that, and they say, but. Well, people don't understand. That is an important part of your life, to know that you will never be on the street. Your children will be educated. You will have health care. Those are not things to be quite dismissive of. And so as I have listened over the past few days, I say to myself, again, people are only interested in what, in oppression. And I take from you so that I can have. So I return to Cuba tomorrow evening, you know, with a heavy heart. But I return, and, you know, I'm happy that I will be able to be among the Cuban people at this point in their mourning.
That's great that we start off the program with you today. I completely unexpected, but it's such a refreshing thing to hear your report. And hopefully when you get back, you'll tell us what you witnessed once you got there.
Yes, I will. I most certainly will. As I said, it's going to be a bittersweet return. This certainly was not expected when we made, you know, when we made arrangements to go months ago. So that's all I have to share today.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much for your call today and for getting us started right on topic.
Okay.
Jay from Queens, you're on the air. Jay?
Hello, how are you, Yutrice?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Listen, the first thing that
Hold it. You sound like you're on speaker. That's really giving us a lot of reverb.
I'm better now. The first thing I'd like to say is, in regards to Fidel, he was a great leader who stood up for his people and wanted what was best for his people. But most of all, he stood up against his people being oppressed and his love for African people in regards to before he came into office, we all know the racism that was going on in that country with the backing of the United States and the hypocrisy in which America speaks, you know, about how it's about fairness and equality and all of these things. But, I mean, Castro gave his people a great deal. Fortunately, I'm one of those people whose family members have benefited from the medical program in Cuba. My niece was able to become a doctor in Cuba. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I just have much respect for him, the way that he stood tall, the way that he went and helped our African brothers and sisters over in Africa, the manner in which he sees himself as an African, you know? And he never backed down from these people. You know, he made it be clear that he wasn't going to forsake his brothers and sisters for America's riches. So all we can
Truth be told, by the time Fidel Castro came along in the struggle, Antonio Maceo and many Afro-Cubans had already been in the heat of battle. And he was able to join and continue the battle. This is very important, and he never denied that. Very important. I think you're right about making the connection as well to liberation efforts in the African diaspora. Very important contribution indeed. Thank you for your contribution today. Go ahead, finish your thought.
Yeah, I just hope that we see Fidel as something much greater and something much broader than the way that America will try to depict him. I think the most beautiful picture I saw was on Facebook, Yutrice, and it was of millions and millions and millions of people that was in the street lining up to embrace their love for Fidel. That could never happen here in America. There would never be anyone in this country that could generate that type of love and support. So I just hope that we look at the propaganda that's being put forward in regards to Fidel and understand that he was a great man who loved his people and he didn't want to see his people abused by outsiders and taken advantage of and treated as though they were nothing, you know, and used for their cultural resources, so that others could become rich, but the people could never benefit from it and enjoy the fruits of their great labor. So we should always look at Fidel as a hero, as a great man, and as the African who he admitted that he was. And I just hope he rests in peace forever and that we feel the love that he felt for us as African people, like when he came to Harlem. Have a good day,
sister. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Ma'at from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, Hotep to the family during this holiday season, I'll say. I just want to say ditto to the previous callers. I'll be looking forward, I'm sure, to Patricia's report after her return. And, you know, that makes me think of an idea, Eutrice, that Ali suggested, in that the New Yorkers and the people in L.A., it seemed like we need to somehow start to come together. But we'll figure that out maybe during the holiday season. As to Cuba, I think, I guess, about three things. I think that when Africa called, Cuba answered and listened. And when the brother mentioned the medical school that you know, helps a lot of our community go to medical school and deal with even very innovative medical advances and even holistic practices. And when Katrina went down, We need to remember this, and maybe giving us some heads up on this crazy Republican coming on board. But they offered a number of doctors, and if I'm correct, maybe you can clarify, Eutrice. I think the G.W. Bush administration turned the doctors to Cuba offered, you know, when nothing was available for our people there. I think they would turn back, but I'm not. I think that was the case. And lastly, I think, and you mentioned it earlier, someone that's surrounded with to the infinity degree, netra, good ordered design, and divine providence, where he was so protected that he was able. What did you say? 638 attempts on his life.
That are known.
Probably more than that. And that's my last point. I'll continue to listen. Thank you so much for the program.
Thank you for calling and contributing. Veronica from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good day. Peace and love, sister Eutrice. Beloved.
Thank you.
Thank you. What has come across my mind was I thought of these people that are in Miami. Aren't these the same people that think like, let's say, the Trumps of the world? I thought these are the same people that allowed Zimmerman to exist and Trayvon Martin. In that atmosphere, that only could happen. And that's why he said, if you're not willing to share with the Africans, they were free to leave and they left. So the fact that they're celebrating, that could never take away from the accomplishments of Fidel Castro. You love him even more. He was an Ali. He was a Malcolm. You know, he was a Clark. He was a Ben. Shashi McIntyre. You know, and we could go on. There is nothing they could take away from his accomplishments. When you have, you know, people that can applaud what they did in Libya, you know, and for that, you know, we should go out there and march, because these people that are out there marching, for me, Dr. Clark said, it's a waste of good shoe leather unless you want to exercise. I didn't see these same people out there for when they shoot a one-year-old in the head or unarmed people. And we should go out in the streets and we should celebrate Fidel right here. That itself would give them something, and celebrate the things, the 10 or more accomplishments, free medical care, free school, free education. That itself would tell them what we expect, what we want.
Well, you know, are the sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters of the plantocracy, the aristocracy,
exactly,
if you could call it that, of Cuba. So they are likely not to look kindly upon Fidel Castro or any person embodying his philosophy and so forth. But one thing you should watch, the next time the news covers an exhilarated group of people out in the streets celebrating the death of Fidel Castro, you should look through the crowd. You would have only a short time to do it, but
I dare you to count the black faces that you would see. You won't see any. Every time
precisely my point.
Every time, you know,
precisely
you see
my point.
The Miami Herald, lots of pictures of people in the streets with their pots and pans and noisemakers jumping up and down, celebrating the fact that Castro is gone. And on television, you're seeing repeated film footage of people doing the same thing. And you look and you say, well, that's remarkable. There are no black faces here. So it's not that all Cubans think that Castro needed to die. Quite a few people seem to disagree, considering that there are many, many, many Afro-Cubans who have an entirely different point of view, entirely different perspective on Fidel Castro and his contributions, not just to Cuba, but to the African world as well, and the developing world as well. So it is
an
interesting.
In psychology, who celebrates someone's death? It sounds like the woman that lost when she celebrated Gaddafi's death? It's along the same psychical.
Yeah, that's the one who said, we came, we saw, he's
we came,
dead.
We conquered, we saw, devil.
Yeah, and he's dead. Well, okay,
inhumane.
That's a whole different sentiment. But I thank you for calling in and contributing today. Thanks, Veronica. Jay from Queens. Another Jay from Queens.
Hi, Utrice. Good afternoon.
Hello.
You recognize my laugh, I hope. Because now I know there's two J's. I mean, I thought there were, but I think you know the difference on voices, at least. That being said, I wanted to share with you something, and with the audience, of course, and those who care, if I may. What struck me in my heart so deeply when I read that Fidel had died, I learned that Saturday morning. And it was in the course of glancing at the New York Post and its headlines. And I'm going to, if I may, give just a paragraph. It's brief. I learned this morning that Fidel Castro had died yesterday. The Post headlines, of course, was his usual derisive self in expressing delight in Castro's death. Nevertheless, the news left me to think about the people of Cuba. I pondered and marveled at the exemplary role that Castro had played in defending Cuba's right to self-determination while lifting the living standards of the Cuban people despite the many attempts by the imperialists to crush the Cuban Revolution for over 50 years. I thought about the conviction of the Cuban people, particularly in fighting with the people of Southern Africa for their liberation against apartheid. And I remembered how Castro and the people of Cuba extended assistance to the suffering people of America during Katrina, people in America, the U.S. of amnesia, and how the aid was rejected because of the arrogance and hubris of an inept Bush administration in the crisis. I remember how Cuba gave aid to Grenada, West Indies, and to Haiti, and to many other nations. And most assuredly, Castro's death brings to mind the importance of understanding who your real friends and allies are in the time of struggle. So it is with this theme, these things in mind that I post, and I post it on Facebook, ode to Fidel Castro and the people of Cuba, and it's a power in and unto the people. Thanks, Fidel. Rest in peace. So that was my ode, and it was heartfelt and straight from something I had to say in learning of his death. I dare say, in terms of America's relationship and Barack, and as the CEO of the American Empire, smiling faces, you know the song, you know, watch your back. Sometimes they smile, but they know no traces. So even in his extending his diplomatic effort to today in the rest of the internment of Fidel, he is mindful of his legacy and the politics of America for those Cubans who did benefit and have benefited in coming to America. Must remember, when you are alleged to be escaping tyrants and so forth, America extends a great deal of hand to those, particularly those of a lighter hue. But the dark-skinned Cubans that came over in the Marielito, in the boats, were turned back. Let us not forget that. I pause for a minute, Therese, your thoughts.
Oh, thank you for your contribution. This is one of the things that I think is so good about radio. We are able to connect, even at a time of sorrow, and a time when we need to just take a moment, a breather, to reflect. And we could find no greater cause, really, than to remind ourselves not only of the contributions that Fidel Castro made, but the responsibility we have. This is really part of the exercise, too, because he showed by example the responsibility that we have one to another, and certainly for the larger cause of freedom and justice. And I thank you for that. It was very poetic and very heartfelt. Thank you for contributing to that today.
Thank you, Jess. Good day.
Thanks. Jose from Rosedale, you're on the air.
Greetings, my professor.
Hello, Jose. How are you?
Fine. Ancestral blessings be upon you always.
Thank you, and you too.
Thank you.
Your thoughts today about Fidel Castro?
Well, I would just like to first say that, you know, the oppressors will never do justice to the oppressed. And at the hearing of his passing, and I looked at how this Christian nation behaved. When I looked at those Christians in Miami, and I listened to the talk show, the television and the talk show radios, and I listened to all these Christians, how they talk about this great humanitarian. It's no wonder that I don't want no part of Christianity. But anyway, you know, I've learned from Fidel as an African growing up in the Caribbean, Jamaica to be exact, the land of Garvey. And I've seen, I've experienced, I've lived injustice. And I've seen how one of our leaders, the late Michael Manley, tried to take our people in this direction. Of all the leaders to come along after Garvey, I think Michael has come the closest to trying to create a level playing field in our island nation. But the same folks who did not agree with what El Presidente was doing in Cuba were the same folks who destroyed the movement in Jamaica. And I have learned a long time ago that the friends, the enemies of our of the white folks are not necessarily our enemies. And their friends are neither our friends. So we have, if we have not learned anything, we should learn from great leaders such as Fidel and Malcolm and so forth, that we have to be able to distinguish the difference between our friends and our enemies. And we are not very good at rewarding our enemies, our friends, and punishing our enemies. And so we go through life with that kind of situation. And I cannot say more than what the others have said about Fidel. Fidel has been, many of us have been a beneficiary of the humanitarianism of this man. I think all conscious Africans in and outside of the African continent and all suffering people has lost a true friend. And I know I have the ability to distinguish between enemies and friends. And this man has been a great friend to us as a people. And I simply hope that if there is such a place called heaven where good folks are rewarded, I know that this is where this man will be going. But not the other ones that those Christians have been telling us about. And so I am saddened by the loss of this great man. And I hope that the African leaders that we have today and the black congressional caucus and all these so-called black folks who claim they're representing us, our hopes and our aspirations, I hope they study this man's life and learn something from what a real leader should be. and learn about courage. And these are things that is lacking in these charlatans that we have representing us. And so may his soul forever rest in peace. And I am just, you know, I'm in a mood right now that I can't even explain it, my professor. But you, I'm sure you understand my sentiments.
I certainly do. Could you talk a little bit, if I could push you a little bit here, mm-hmm. on the relationship between Michael Manley and Fidel Castro? And not just Michael Manley. We have Maurice Bishop,
yes.
as well. We have in Guyana. Mm-hmm. We also have, you know, we have a lot of influence throughout the Caribbean. And as you know, there's a pretty significant population of Jamaicans in Cuba.
Yes.
Especially in Santiago de Cuba. So mm-hmm. talk about Manley's influence by Fidel Castro and what he in turn tried to do in Jamaica that was met with such force.
I think Michael Manley, like Fidel, came from a privileged class of people. And I don't know what it is that makes men like these shy away from the life of privilege that they were born into and saw the pain and suffering of the working class people and decided that they are going to be their champion. And Michael set about to change many of the obstacles that were standing in the way of poor people advancing. And the ruling class, the white and mulatto class down there, they didn't like that too well. And as I said, Michael came along as one of the leaders. Apart from Marcus, I've not seen another leader to come along apart from Marcus Garvey, who tried to bring about some semblance of leveling of the social field in Jamaica. There was such a great injustice in Jamaica, where the suffering was there. When I hear a lot of our people come to America and they talk about Jamaica and they say they never had any racial problem in Jamaica, there was no racism, it's a little classism and so forth. I don't know where these people are living, because we had racial problems, we had class problems, we had all kinds of problems there. But one thing for sure is that those of us that were richly melanated were at the bottom of the ladder. And everywhere you go in the Caribbean and Central and South America, those of us that are richly melanated, we are at a great disadvantage, because those are the mulatto class, who are usually the children of the slave owners, who never identified with their African enslaved mothers. They want to associate themselves with their master, who never accepted them. So, but that was where they were always aiming for. So they wind up setting themselves apart from the rest of us. So there was really, we were at the bottom, they were in between. They were like the buffer between us and white folks. And that was what Michael set about breaking down. And he met with a whole lot of opposition. There were even some of our people who didn't truly understand what this man was trying to do for us, and they sided with the ruling class. And so Michael was able to get some things done. There were schools there, and technology, and medical. There are so many of our doctors that got their education in Cuba. Many of them today has forgotten where they're coming from. And so Michael and Fidel and so they were trying to set up a system that was different from what we are living under here in this country. A system where people had the opportunity to get a decent education, to use their faculties to think, not to be told what to do and to be controlled. And so if Fidel was allowed and Michael and others were allowed to go through with this, with what they were aiming at, we would have been able to get all the kinks out of that system that we're trying to perfect. I would have had a system today that all of us would be proud of. But when you have a system where that is powerful, they have the military might and the economic might and the political might to beat you down and to tell you that our system is the best system and not giving the other system a chance to live and to show what they can do. And Fidel is an example. And again, I cannot say enough about this man, and conscious people throughout the world will understand where he was trying to take us. And so that is just my take on that, my professor.
Thank you so much for your contribution today. Very profound. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ed from Queens, you have just a tiny bit of time, I'm sorry to say, but we must hear from you. What have you to say?
Yeah, how you doing, Latrice?
Fine, thank you.
I'm saddened by an icon leaving this earth, even though he himself predicted that he might not make it. And, what he left behind, what his legacy was, that's the most important thing. I mean, we don't need to deify him. He was a man. There were shortcomings in the Cuban government, and he had to rule with an iron fist because he was only 90 miles away from his greatest adversaries who tried to kill him over 400 times. Everything from poison cigars to the banned pigs. So in that respect, he was definitely strong. The free medical programs, the aid he gave to Angola, the part that he played in the struggle against apartheid, the fact that Nelson Mandela looked at him as an ally goes without saying. But we must not get caught up in the romantic history writing and look at the practical things that he did accomplish with his government and try to force this government to honor those things and protect them. I mean, personally, I think Barack Obama should have went there himself, or at least sent Joe Biden, not some underlings or some adversaries to his funeral, or some underlings or some lessers to the funeral. I mean, that would just been a sign of respect. But I tend to not expect too much from the Obama administration. But read about him. Read about the man. Read about Che Guevara. Read about the revolution. Get all the information you can, because once you know the truth and you've educated yourself, then you can try to emulate that in your personal life and your social life. And that's pretty much it.
Thank you. And perfectly timed as well, so because that brings us to the end of the program today. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories, LEID stories at gmail.com. I'm so glad that we had some time to just reflect today. More programs will be coming. You know, we just need to pause and not just get overwhelmed by it. But we take this a little at a time because there's so much to discuss. A pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. We see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.